Good morning. It is October 6th, and I think for pretty much everyone in the state, the summer suddenly just fell out the rear end of it. Yesterday it was beautiful and 80 degrees, and today it's not that. But I think for some of us, that'll probably be a welcome relief. Some of us who've been seeding and panicking, probably not so much of an enjoyable period coming up. But it looks like fall is upon us and leaf cleaning season is coming too. Online today, we got Dr. Xiaowei Wu, we got Dr. Dave Gardner, we got Dr. Tyler Carr, and Dr. Dave Shetler. All right, Dr. Carr, take it away.
All right, guys. I hope everybody's doing all right today. So with this kind of change that we have in temperatures and we're getting later into the year, it's we're kind of near that window, ending that near the end of that window for establishing turf grass from seed. If we have tall fescue or perennial ryegrass that's going out that may germinate a little bit faster than our Kentucky bluegrasses, you could probably get away with it. But if you have Kentucky bluegrass that you're putting out as seed, and you don't have some type of cover to keep that area warmer, the temperatures are getting to a point where that establishment may take a while, and you may not have full establishment until the spring. Some things also that you could consider are trying to do some type of slit seeding to get it more the seed more into the soil. Since those soil temperatures may maintain some consistency, and not drop as quickly as the air temperatures. Another thing to consider aside from seeding is I'm seeing a lot of leaves falling, especially in my backyard at home. And a lot of my neighbors are collecting these leaves and putting them out on the side of the road to be taken. A lot of times it's fine to just mulch those leaves with your mower, let the microbes decompose those leaves and provide some type of nutrient return back to the lawn. So instead of allowing these to just go decompose somewhere else, they can decompose in your lawn and maybe make it where you don't have to apply as much fertilizer in the future. So that's always gives me a good excuse to go out and crank my mower up for a couple extra weeks in the fall too. So I kind of look forward to that. That's about all I have, guys.
Thank you, Dr. Carr. Dr. Gardner.
All right, good morning, everybody. So I know that things are starting to wind down a little bit, but this is actually a pretty important time of the year for some of our weed control operations. And so, if you had any issues with any of these species this last year, these are winter annuals. So, things like chickweed and henbit and bittercress, if you had a problem with those and you had difficulty controlling those in the spring, sometimes that happens because after they harden off due to winter stress, they can be a little bit more difficult to control with post-emergence herbicides. You may or may not see these right now at this stage, tiny little seedlings, but it's probably getting to be a little bit too late to put out a pre-emergence herbicide to control those. But I would offer that if you had trouble controlling those in the spring last year, that a post-emergence application this October or November, depending on where you are in Ohio, is probably going to be more effective than attempting to control those post-emergence next spring. Okay, so if you had issues with winter annuals last year, and you remember where those were, now is the time maybe to be taking some action on those. For perennial broadleaf weeds like dandelion, white clover, and et cetera, again, most people like to control those in the spring because that's when people are out noticing their lawns. But we know that post-emergence herbicides work better in the fall because you get more translocation below ground to those parts that make the perennial a perennial. And so you tend to get better long-term control. The nice thing is that if those weeds are next to ornamentals or garden species, you're less likely to have a problem with that at this time of the year because the leaves are falling off of the ornamentals and mostly the garden crops have been harvested, right? So I love to show this picture. So this was an application that I made in November of one year, and this was the following spring when the ash trees were coming back into leaf. You remember ash trees, right? Beautiful trees. But this stayed weed-free, this area, until the following October. So a spring application usually gives you, 6 to 10 weeks of control. A fall application can usually last up to a year. You know, 10 to 12 months is not that unreasonable to expect. So, you know, the one thing about that is that it has been kind of dry, and hopefully we will start to see an uptick in the amount of moisture that we're getting. But for those parts of Ohio that are in droughty regions, you know, there's a map that you can look at to see what your moisture status is according to that office right now. But if you do have dry weather right now, know that the herbicides, while they tend to be pretty safe on our grasses, if you make those applications to excessively dry turf areas, it increases the chance of injury to the turf grass, and it increases the chance that it won't be as effective as it could have been to control the weeds. That unfortunately varies based on the product and the rate, the soil moisture content at and after application, the weather at and after application, the turf species and cultivar, and et cetera. But just know that if you are in an area that's excessively dry, that you know, the herbicide might not work as well, and it might cause a little bit more injury to the turf grass, so be aware of that. Also with those fall applications, make sure you're using the ester formulation of the herbicide, not the amine formulation. So you can check that on the label. It'll say something like 2,4-D, isooctyl ester, or it will tell you the corresponding amine formulation. Make sure that you're using the ester formulation, because those are the ones that are more effective in cooler weather. Last thing I want to mention is that the month of October is when our tropical grasses start to turn purple. So crabgrass and other annual grasses. So you can tell savanna grasses in the landscape, because those turn the straw white color, but then the tropical grasses are the ones that tend to turn purple. So it's a good opportunity to go out and plan where you're going to put out your pre-emergence application this coming spring. Ed, that's what I have for this week.
Thank you, Dr. Gardner. Dr. Wu, welcome back.
Good morning, everyone. Feel great to come back after taking 6 weeks off. And it's great to see everyone. So when I was on leave, actually, there have been someone asking, some homeowners asking if they can skip aeration process to save money. So so that's why I want to bring it up. It's not a new topic, but I just want to refresh your mind. Aeration, it's pretty essential and very important unless the homeowners have newly established norm and that do not have much thatch problem or soil compaction problems. So there are all sorts of benefits that aeration can bring to us, that such as reducing soil compaction and promoting exchange and drainage. And this is very important when it has a heavy rain and also heavy snow. And also reduce thatch, and overall that promotes the grass health and development. And also it can help with our pest management. For example, when you do aeration, that can reduce a significant amount of white grubs. We know that white grubs, and also some other soil pests, we know that white grubs, they overwinter as navvy. So in September, when most aeration down, the white grubs approach mostly second to third instars. And in October, now they should have been away in third instar stage. So reducing the white grub densities in the prior to the winter and can also reduce the amount of the overwinter populations and for the next generation in the next year. And also that's healthy and stout grass can help tolerate more pest damage, and also that can reduce disease occurrence, because the excessive moisture component and also the pressure the grass has, the diseases are more going to happen. And so given that, I would strongly encourage aeration. It's not to save money. If you don't do that, to the other point, you might spend more money in the future. So, when you do that, make sure you watch your cable and the wires buried on the ground. Usually, if you have a contractor, they can help you to deal with that. But if you want to do it by yourself, you can probably contact the city service to get that the lines mapped up. That's what I have today. Thank you.
Thank you, Dr. Wu. All right, please, No, not least. Last but not least, Dr. Shetler.
Yeah, I'd like to briefly talk about still getting people that are, you know, the skunks or raccoons, and sometimes even the crows are showing the white grubs, pulling back the turf and finding these big, fat, and sassy third instar grubs out there. Remember that at this time of the year, Dilox is really the only effective material because it has contact toxicity. That means that as you irrigate or water in the Dilox, the active ingredient, when it just contacts the cuticle of the insect, it can penetrate through the cuticle and kill the insect by contact. Most of the neonicotinoids really have to be ingested. So if you look at the grubs, and the grubs are sort of this bright white with a dark gray or brown cecal sac. That means the tip of the abdomen is a brownish in color. That means they're actively feeding. You could use something like clothianidin or arena at that time. But if they've turned sort of a buttery yellow color, that means they've stopped feeding for the season and are getting ready to overwinter. And so you'd need a contact toxicity insecticide for that. Our turf, at least the turf in my neighborhood, is still largely dormant. Even though we had a rainfall event that came through last night, I don't think it's all that much to bring them out of dormancy. And even with the cool weather, normally our turf begins to recover, but it's really very dry, at least in my neighborhood. So if you've got a grub issue with dry turf, I do recommend that you apply, you know, something like two-tenths of an inch to a quarter of an inch of irrigation the day before you make the treatment, and then irrigate as heavily as you can right after the treatment so that you get the grub insecticide down to where the grubs are. Another thing that's happening, getting lots of reports up in the northern counties of Ohio of immense numbers of crane fly adults flying around. People don't realize that Ohio has been invaded by the European marsh crane fly. This is a different species than the European crane fly. There's two different species. The difference is native crane flies that are flying. I've seen a few of them in my backyard. If you take a look at the native crane flies, and by the way, these things are harmless. The adults actually don't have functional mouth parts, so they can't bite or anything like that, even though they look like a giant mosquito. If you go and pick one up or get close enough, if it's a native crane fly, the entire wing will be what we call hyaline. In other words, it will all appear the same color, usually sort of a very pale amber color for that. On the other hand, both the European crane fly and the European marsh crane fly, if you notice on the wing and the fore part of the wing on the anterior end here, you'll notice that there's a dark brown stripe, which are the wing veins, by a pale white stripe. And it's this white stripe on the wing that will indicate that it's one of these European invading species. Why would the natives be there? Well, the native crane flies feed on decaying matter, like the thatch, or if the turf got killed by something, they'll be there. The marsh crane fly, on the other hand, the larvae do eat the turf. And so if you do think you've got the marsh crane fly, large numbers of them, you may have treatment. Experience that the diamides, things like the acelaprin and the tetrino, seem to work fairly well on crane fly larvae, but the best controls that I've seen are combination products. So things like Aloft or Triple Crown, things that contain a neonicotinoid plus a pyrethroid, have been the best controls for crane fly larval control. That's all I've got for this week.
Thank you, Dr. Shetler. Everything's just up in the northern part of the state, the Northern Ohio superintendents. They have their big anniversary event coming up in November. So if you want to get involved, reach out to them. The ACI Turf Grass Scholarship outing is on Monday. There's still the ability to put teams in if that's something you're interested in doing. The one thing that was really bugging us, it looked like there was napalm was out on the front lawn here in Worcester, the amount of rust that was running around. I would think that that rainfall is going to put some element of subsidence to that, along with the cooler temperatures. But on older lawns, you should have been walking around with pretty orange-looking shoes, and your dogs were coming out with red material. That is not the local factory putting out any chemicals. That is just pathogen rust, or the rust pathogen. Other than that, OTF is coming up in December. Expect to see the conference preview coming out pretty soon. And we are starting, like I said, last week or 2 weeks ago to get into our bi-weekly meetings. So the next time we will be up is probably the middle of October. And with the way this weather is progressing, we'll probably be all buried under 4 feet of snow. And that might be the last one for the season. With that, I would say thank you to everyone. And we will talk to you all in 2 weeks' time.